Hey guys, Paul here. I just have one question for you. Do you prefer being on the ground when you eat breakfast, watch TV, and sleep? Or do you prefer to do such things on comfortable chairs, couches, and beds? If you chose the latter option, well then Fairbury Furniture is the place for you. Fairbury Furniture is the area's premier furniture store serving Chenoa, Forest, Pontiac, Champaign, Dwight, Bloomington, and surrounding areas since 2004. They've earned countless 5-star reviews. I literally can't even count them, there's too many, on Google, GoodBeds, and Facebook for their incredible customer service, fair prices, gorgeous furniture, and their very generous delivery and setup services, which they offer to all of their customers. Fairbury Furniture has top quality sofas, recliners, dressers, beds, mattresses, lamps, entertainment centers, dining sets, coffee tables, really any piece of furniture that you could imagine, while also offering beloved brands like Ashley, Tempur-Pedic, and Leather Italia that are sure to enrich your home living, which is of high importance these days since we're spending a lot of time at home. So when you decide it's time for a furniture upgrade, head on over to Fairbury Furniture and tell them that the Golden Fusion podcast sent you. You're sure to find something you love. Hello and welcome to the Golden Fusion Podcast, a show where we broadcast the inspiring lives of incredible Central Illinoisans. I'm your host, Paul Garcia, and today my guest is none other than one of the most well-known names in Fairbury, Illinois, John Strong. Many of my listeners may know John as the owner of Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, which is, in my opinion, the greatest pizza place in Illinois, or maybe as a landlord as he owns multiple different real estate properties in the area, or maybe even as that guy with the big Catholic family. Interestingly enough, none of these things are why I have John on the show today, although they do get mentioned. Today I'm speaking with John about his incredible feat of completing what is widely considered one of the most difficult one-day sporting events in the world, an Ironman triathlon. An Ironman triathlon is a long-distance triathlon race organized by the World Triathlon Corporation, consisting of a 2.4-mile swim in a lake with waves, crazy, and a 112-mile bike ride, and a good old-fashioned 26.22-mile marathon, all raced in that order, in one day. Also, you know how they say having kids kind of drained you of all your energy? I had like 3 cups of coffee before this conversation and was drinking some throughout it, while John had woken up early and gone to morning mass with his entire family all before coming to talk to me. And dude, he's like the Energizer Bunny. It's pretty amazing. And you can just hear it in his voice. I mean, anyways, enough about that. Let's get right into this episode. Here we go. John Strong, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
You're a man of many hats, I think. You own Marshalloni's here in town. You also have, how many kids? 12 kids? 11 kids?
11.
Oh my goodness. And then you, I think you own some property, is that right?
Well, I took a little bit of the pizza money and started buying properties back in 92. That's been a real good deal all the way through now, so it's really helped me out now.
Is it safe to say you're a busy man then?
Not really. It's not that big a deal. I would say my wife's far more busy than I am. She's the one that does all the work.
I notice a lot of people are quick to say they're so, so busy. Even people that I wouldn't necessarily think are that busy. You just kind of deny that you're busy. That's kind of unhumble of you.
Well, if you say busy, I mean, people work a lot harder than I do. You look around town here, you see some people working really hard. So making pizza is pretty easy. It is really easy. And my wife is at home taking care of the children. She homeschooled them. She worked a lot harder than I did.
Oh, my goodness.
Through our life. I mean, we're hitting 52 now. We only have 4 kids at home. And, I mean, things are slowing down a lot, but still a lot to do.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I nearly forgot that you also homeschooled all of your kids, at least for the majority of their schooling.
Well, the first three went all the way through. First four, actually. Bernadette went all the way through also. Then she went to high school. And then Victor and Francis wanted to play football, so we let them go to high school and on down. And then we got Claire and Marie, and Blaze is now in high school, too. So the other two, Sia and Rita, will probably go to high school, too. But, I mean, they can homeschool at home if they want. So we'll see.
You just got back from morning mass in Fairbury.
Correct.
Do you go nearly every day of the week to morning mass?
We try to. We probably hit it about 95% of the time. When we're out of town, we try to catch mass at other churches. But yeah, no, mass is the pinnacle of our life. It's the whole thing. I mean, there's only one reason we're here, is to get to heaven. And so I put everything towards that. It's not to get rich, not to have a bunch of kids. It's not any of that. It's to get to heaven personally. And So I do what God tells me to do, and that's it. He wants me to come visit him.
That is really awesome. That really transitions into the rest of the stuff we're going to talk about really well. Have you always been a guy who has his schedule full, who's relatively busy? You at least have things to worry about. Has that always been the case for most of your life?
I would say yes. When I got married and I started working, the schedule, it was pretty, I mean, we get up and we did the same thing, but things changed. Okay, so I'd say they're the same, but they changed. I mean, we had to get up and go to church, got to get up and go to work. You got to come home and eat and go to bed. So you asked if I was busy, if I had a schedule. The schedule got more and more in line with where I wanted to go. We want to get to heaven and we want to be successful and feed the kids. So the only thing that we did, we went to church, we both worked hard, and then that was the end of that. So, but every day we went to church at 8. Every day I would go to work at 9. Every day I'd be home at 9. So I worked 9 to 9 pretty much every day. And then it got worse when I got out there and got the bowling alley. Sometimes I wouldn't get home till midnight. So those were busy, but it's not that busy because she could come, the kids and my wife could come for lunch. They could come for dinner. They'd come see me anytime. I would go home actually afternoon. I would be off from 2 to 4. So I get a little break in there and get some workouts in. Because I did run marathons for a long time, even before trying to do the Ironman. We did the same schedule pretty much every day. It's really funny. I just kept my head down and I worked. So that's what I did.
It sounds like you weren't really living for yourself. It seems like you were really working to provide for your family. I don't know how you made time to work out. How did you do that when you had this business and all your kids and stuff? I've listened to people talk about Ironman triathlons, and they require a ludicrous amount of work. Maybe you can explain that to me a little better. How'd you make time to work out as vigorously as you needed to for this race?
Okay, so I would say in about 2017, I sold the building that I was in out on 24. And when I moved back to my old place here on Locust Street, my hours drastically reduced in work time. So I no longer had to go to work at 9 a.m. I didn't have to go to work till 2 in the afternoon. And even then, I didn't even need to do it then. I actually didn't need to go to work till 4 because I could make dough whenever I wanted. And then I actually have really good employees. I've been very blessed here in Fairbury. The employees here are fantastic. The kids that worked for me all through these 30 years of business have been fantastic. Anyhow, right now, they're really good also. I don't even need to come to work. So I would work out during the day. So I'm not your typical Ironman. Those Ironmen that are real Ironmen, they go to work all day long. They'll get up at 3 in the morning, do their bike, get done at 9, go to work. They'll get off at 5, they'll go for a run for 2 or 3 hours. I mean, those guys, and those women are really the ones that are really Ironman. I had all day to do my workout, so I really didn't have a problem.
It's really insane how you completed an Ironman at all. I think it's one of the most impressive feats of human endurance and willpower that there is.
Physical, it is difficult, but it's really mental. It's really funny. It's a different kind of race than you actually think it is. Because you can run, you can swim, and you can bike. Can you put them all together? And can you hang in there? That's the hard part. Can you hang? And you can.
I really can't believe that you start with over 2 miles of swimming.
2.4 miles of swimming. Right. In the lake. And this year's race in 2019 in Madison was pretty choppy. And my brother was there to watch me. And he said they were pulling people out of the water about a half a mile in the race. It's really, because you know, if you train in a pool and it's nice and flat and then you get in the choppy, wavy, you might get scared or you might get, it's not good. They'll pull you out of the water.
My girlfriend was a former Division I swimmer, very competitive. Personally, when I was in peak shape, I did a workout with her in the pool. 1,500 yards, I stopped over 20 times just because we were doing laps. I still couldn't finish. And that was under a mile. I cramped up. And I went down. I could not finish. I would have been pulled out of that choppy water very quickly. I can't believe that me, and I was 22, I was in good shape, couldn't finish a mile in the pool. The thing about being in the water, if you start slowing down too much and get too tired, you don't just stop, you sink.
Right.
And especially in the middle of a lake.
Well, actually, your legs sink right away, it seems like. You think you're flat in the water, but you're actually like an L. Yeah, you don't, if you could actually see yourself in the water, you'd look kind of funny. But, okay, so why could you only do 1,500? I'll ask you this question. How many times did you swim before that?
In that whole year, less than 5.
Right. So the idea was when I got in and I started, so I was not a swimmer. I was a swimmer. So I'm a strong swimmer, but I never swam competitively and I never did it for real. You get in there and I had a hard time swimming a quarter mile. And that was it. I go in there, it's 20 minutes. I can't do anymore. I go home. Come in there. Week later, I'm doing a half mile. Week later, I'm doing a mile. Week later, I'm doing 2 miles. And then it's just, if you get over it, you can swim forever. Not really, but in general, you could. And so your body, that's what I find is amazing, is your body, it does whatever it needs to do whatever you want it to do. I want to swim 3 miles. Your body says, no problem. Give me a little chance. Let's work it up. You can just swim 3 miles. Piece of cake.
I think there's a lot of value in not getting down on yourself when you're not doing too hot in the very beginning. It seems like it's a game of incremental gains, you know, small gains over time eventually is going to bring you somewhere great. And if you have that perseverance muscle, you're going to fare pretty well in something like this, in training for a triathlon, I think.
You bet. If you can get over those setbacks, you're on your way. I started out the swim only a quarter mile. The bike was worse. I got a bike 112 miles in this race. I could bike 4. I was biking 4 miles a day for the first couple weeks. Why? Because on the second day, my butt hurt so bad on the bike, it was ridiculous. You just can't. Your body is not, it can't handle it. It can't do it. And then, but you can jump from 4 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 40. You know, you bounce up and you go farther and farther. But I would do 40 milers in the middle of the day, and I would have to walk my bike home. I wouldn't make 40. I'd get to about 36, and my body went from okay to completely drained in a matter of minutes. It was over. And they call it in running, we called it bonking, which is the same idea. You just run out of energy. Your body says, that's good, you're done. And you take that as, I can't go any farther than that? Is this the farthest that I can go? If you take it that way, it is. But if you can handle it mentally, no, you're just getting started. Your body says, all right, let's do it again. So you get out there and you do a 20, a 30, 35, a 40, 45, 50. You fall apart, because I fell apart at 60, 65. And then there's lots of different things that happen to you on the whole training circuit. I've been out there and I put my head down because I'm tired. Just for a second. You lean it down, pull it back up, and you're dizzy. And right off the road. And luckily, you go, I was going off into the ditch. I was on the side of the road. You know, you don't veer into the road because a lot of things are happening to you. So the training I did was for a year. And when I started, I couldn't bike. Like I said, I could only bike about 4 miles. I can only swim about a quarter, but I could run. And I was doing 18 to 22 miles on the weekend constantly through that whole time because I knew I could run. And I thought, my body's got to get prepared because next summer, I got to do the bike. The bike's going to be it. So I ran and ran and ran all through the winter. And then when summertime came, that's when I started stepping up the bike. And I was doing, you know, 20, 30, 40 miles a day. And I got to 112. It was pretty cool. And that took me 7 hours to do that the first time. 7 hours to do 112 miles. And I did not feel good for a long time after that.
The chemical reactions going down in your body during this type of training has got to be insane. Like, are you having weird effects on your body during this? Like, are you having prolonged fatigue or sickness or anything as a result of, like, the lactic acid buildup, among other things?
Okay, so I would say, I mean, I'm not really good at all those things like lactic acid buildup, but I would say, because I experienced that in short, fast runs. So the training that I was doing was always under that threshold. They call it the lactic threshold. I wasn't doing this to do it fast. So I wasn't working fast. I was just going out there and told myself, you were doing 60 miles on the bike and you're not coming home until you're done. And same thing, 120, you're doing 120 miles on a bike, you're not coming home until you're done. And so I felt that I could do that. Then it became a mental thing. I had to get it done. I had those bad days. You have bad days, and those bad days are rough. Those are when your body runs out of energy and you quickly come back. You eat some food, you come home, you sit down, you eat some food, you drink some water, and an hour later, it's like you never worked out. Because I'm not tired, as in, I don't know how to explain it, but you know, you talk about the swimming, you can get extremely tired doing a quarter mile. Extremely. But you get out 20 minutes later, it's not like you didn't swim. It was great. So I don't know, that the biking and the swimming were easy on the body. The running was very hard, but I didn't have to worry about that because I already had that. So that was what was nice about my Ironman training.
So I want to back up just a little bit. why did you want to do this Ironman? You said you could barely swim a quarter mile. You could, at the beginning, only bike 4 miles. An Ironman calls for a heck of a lot more than that. Why did you decide you wanted to do this in the first place?
It's an interesting question, and I can answer that. It's actually kind of a long answer. The Bible says only a few make it to heaven. All right? I want to be in that few. The marathon, only a few people finish marathons. I want to be in that few. Only a few people can do a marathon in 3 hours. Of the few people that may do a marathon, only a few of them can do it in 3 hours. I wanted to be a part of that few. That one I didn't make. 305 was my fastest marathon ever. So Ironman, again, very few do Ironman. And I want to be in that number. That's all there is to it. There's always a number that I want to be a part of. A millionaire. Someday I want to be a millionaire. Only a few people are millionaires. Only 20 million Americans that are millionaires. That's on a few number, and that's a number I'd like to be a part of. So I like being a member of the few. So you asked why I did it? Because I want to be a member of the few.
I can actually safely say I've never had the experiences you did with when your body actually shuts down when you're biking and you had to walk. I think the vast majority of people are with me on that. Most of us have not had that experience happen to us. When stuff would get hard, at least during training for me, whether it be lifting weights or wrestling especially, I would always think of, like, you want to be able to sacrifice when you're a dad. When I'm a dad, I want to be able to do what's really, really hard for the good of my children, for the good of my wife. And that kind of serves as my motivation. And maybe that wouldn't be sufficient if I was battling my body shutting down. What does your mind go to when you are in a particularly tough spot during your training? When you are really hurting, you know, where does your mind go?
Let's see. I would say there's a lot of time out there. Okay, so that when you're swimming, I never really had a hard time swimming. So that was never difficult. Even in the race, it wasn't patty cake, but it was the nearest thing. And probably the biggest thing was I trained without a wetsuit the entire time. And I had a wetsuit, and I put it on, and I floated. I absolutely floated in the water. So the swim was not difficult. The biking was probably my most difficult. And what did I think about when I was on the road? I mean, you're out there for 6 hours, 4 hours, 3 hours. They're all different times of the day, different lengths of time. And you can think about everything. I would think about my business, what I want to do that day. What if I take my wife on a date? What are the kids up to? And there's certainly a lot of kids, you know, Kyle's in the Marines, Victor's in the Marines, you know, what's these guys doing? Actually, Kyle was trucking at the time. What are my girls up to? How are they taking care of their children? They already have 9 grandchildren. Each of the kids is their school. What's happening? So there's a lot of things to think about. When things got hard, then you think about your body. But I would intermix in there some, how my body doing? How am I doing? How am I doing? Am I drinking? Am I eating? Am I, you know, how's it going? But when things started to fall apart, it was over. It wasn't like you could fix it. So it was okay to be content with what I had completed, take it easy and just call it good and then move on. Let's move on. I had a bad day because those are the, and when you say hard days, those are the bad days, actually, is what I call them. Instead of hard days, I call them bad days. You got it. You're going to have them and it's okay. You just go through, you move on to the next day. You finish that day up and you move on to the next day.
Were you ever tempted to quit?
Oh, I never quit. No, I never quit. No. I think there's a difference between breaking down and quitting. When you quit is when you still have, you have some left. And you're going and you say, you know what? I just don't want to do this anymore. That's quitting. That's fine. But then don't tell yourself you're going to come back and try it again. You don't quit. There is no quit. You can fall apart and you do end up walking home. And there are days like that. I remember one day I was running and I was here in town and I went into Dave's and I was actually I knew I was at Dave's. It wasn't like I was completely out of it, but I was physically out. Mark Steffen comes running up and says, Hey, you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm really fine. But I wasn't. And he sits me down and gets me some water. Yeah. And I just sat there probably a half hour, just dazed out of my mind. It was really weird.
Eventually, you go to Wisconsin for this Ironman. After a full year of training, that's a lot of time to dedicate to training.
Well, like, it takes a long time to get up there because you can't do 112 miles in a month. You can. I kind of did, but that was a rough one. But you have to have a lot of time in. You just have to have a lot of time on the road. And a year to do it the first time is what's necessary. You bet. It takes you a year at least.
I know people that have trained for Ironmans as well and started the race and dropped out. The majority of people don't do that, but it's definitely not uncommon for people to not be able to finish this race. Were you confident in your training that you were ready for this, or were you nervous at all?
And it's kind of arrogant to say, but I was fully confident that I could finish the race. It was the goal, and so I was not going to relinquish that goal. But my training that I had done followed the book. My brother had already done one, so I had a mentor, and I felt fully confident when I got there. The thing that I asked, I said a little prayer there, and I said, just don't let me have a mechanical breakdown on a bike. The mechanical breakdown on a bike, you can fix it. It takes a lot of time, but sometimes it can ruin your race. So I was praying for that. I got no control over that. But so I was hoping somebody else would help me out there. And sure enough, I didn't have any problem.
You said your brother did an Ironman
as
well? Oh,
my brother Frank did an Ironman back 2009, about 10 years earlier.
That's insane. Is there an athletic gene that runs in your family? Although this isn't necessarily an athletic race, an athletic event. It's more a willpower event, I would say.
Correct. Like, you know, I agree with you. It doesn't take talent. This is actually a work. Anybody can do an Ironman. I mean, there's people there doing Ironman in fireman suits.
Well, with sufficient training.
Yeah, they got to do their work. That's the thing. This is a work thing. I mean, I can't play Jordan basketball. I can't work hard enough to be like that because I don't have the talent. This particular sport does not. It does take talent. It's not like it doesn't take any. But it's a one that somebody with tiny talent like mine can do it. Yeah, with work. So it's a mental thing.
Right. It kind of irks me personally when people say just work hard and never stop. You'll get to your goal. You'll achieve success in whatever field you want. Me, Paul Garcia, if I dedicate my entire life to playing basketball, I will never be.
You may
in
never
the
start
NBA.
For the high school team.
You're right. Yeah.
Those high school players are awesome. Uh-huh. Have you seen those guys jump? They right. don't come down for 2 minutes. So, yeah, exactly. That's our talent. That's a talent sport. Baseball, talent. You got to have talent if you're going to be good. And you got to work hard too. So I don't have the talent. So yeah, I can work really hard and be average. I mean, there's a big difference between those guys that are really good. The talented Ironman, they finished 4 hours in front of me. 4 hours? You got to be kidding me. That's ridiculous. That's talent. Plus the hard work. They did all the work I did and more. But they also had that God-given talent.
So you said 4 hours ahead of you. This is a long race. Kind of walk me through, you know, how did this all start? How did that day go? You started this race. What did your days look like?
Those days are in my mind like they're pasted there. It's really funny. Yeah, so we went up there the day before and got into our hotel. And the day before, you have to turn in your gear. You got two bags of gear. That you can turn in. You turn in your bike. You go see where your gear is going to be because you have transition. So you're going to swim, and then you're going to run into the building, and you're going to change your clothes, and you run out back out and get on your bike, and you get changed into your running clothes, and you go run. So that's what's done on Friday night. Or maybe it's a Sunday. Actually, I can't remember what day it is now. I think we raced on Saturday. Actually, I can't remember. it's in my mind like yesterday, but yeah, I can't remember what day it is. Okay, it doesn't really matter. The idea is that the following day I got up at 3 a.m. and I ate. I ate my old corn mush and oatmeal and fruit. And then I made my way out, and it's pitch black. And the feeling is like it's really cool. Everybody is so excited. And you're walking, and it's pitch black, and you're walking to your bike. So the first place you go is you go and you drop off your personal gear. So then you also get two bags of personal gear. And in those personal gear is bags that you'll never get back. You might have a sandwich. I had Red Bulls in there. You don't know what you're going to want to eat.
You
drink.
Had Red Bulls in there.
Yeah, I had Red Bull. You put Red Bull in there. I put some Ensure. I put some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I put a Coca-Cola.
A Coca-Cola in Ironman? Yeah. Is this normal?
Yeah, you never know what you want, what you feel like, and you kind of got to go with it. Your plan's got to be very flexible because you don't know what you're going to feel like. And so you have all this stuff in there, and you go and you look and you say, yeah, I want a Red Bull. So you drink that and you take off. And you left everything else, and you'll never see it again. You don't know what you want, so you got to have it all there. So we drop those off, then you go to the bike. And my brother, this is my brother's bike, by the way, he gave me some tires. They're racing tires. And so normal tires, you pump them up to about 100 pounds. Anyhow, so they're all walking up, and the guy's pumping up everybody's tires. So you're getting all ready right before the race. They say 100 pounds, and this guy says 105, and this guy says 98, you know. And you got to worry that you don't pump it up too high in the morning, because it's 50 degrees out. And then if the temperature rises to 90, you pop your tires because you pump them up full. And then at 110, 120, and then they expand because it's hot now. And they go to 140, and boom, they pop. They pop just like balloons.
So that would be.
You come out of your swim, and you got flat tires. But guess who won the race? Munoz, I think, was his name, won the race. Came out of the swim, two flat tires. Not kidding. I go there, and I have racing tires, and I said 140.
140?
Yeah, 140 pounds of pressure. So it was like, I feel special. I mean, just everything that was happening was just, I was feeling good. So, you know, this guy's got 100, you know, and I got a cool looking bike. They all had cool looking bikes too. Everybody has cool looking bikes. Mine looked extra cool though. It's old. Mine's about 15 years old. So you get off there, and then you put your wetsuit on, you make your way down. It's light out now. It's about 7 a.m. Pros are in the water, and we're all standing outside, and the gun goes off, and they take off. Well, I had about 20 minutes before I got in the water, because they let us go three at a time. Three people.
Does your time start for you individually once you hit the water? It's not like go and then, by the way, you, John, are gonna have 20 minutes tacked onto your time.
Correct. That's true. Yeah. So they have the gun time is the one that's on the screens, and everybody sees that time. That's the time the pros are on. When you cross the mat, they have timing chips on your leg, and you go cross the mat. That's when your time starts.
So that's how it works. They have a timing chip on your leg.
A timing chip.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And so you swim with that guy all the way around. You get out of the water. The swim is actually really exciting for me. Because I was in that wetsuit, I felt like a boat. And I'm flying, going through the waves. You know, sometimes you turn to get air and you're in the water. You're just under the wave. No problem. Don't panic. Hang in there. You come out and your body, like, you kind of shoot out the next wave. So, I you know, it was kind of cool. I mean, the whole thing was really cool. My glasses got fogged, which they always do. And so it was kind of difficult to see the buoys that you're supposed to turn around, but there's just people everywhere. Yeah, you're all let out at three people at a time. It's three people per second. You got in there. There was a lot of people in the water. You're always bumping, and it's easy to tell where you're going, because if you're by yourself, you're in the wrong spot. So, you know, you get up, you stop, you look around, you go, oh, I got to go over that way. So you make your way back. But you get around the buoys, you come in, and it was exciting. I just remember relaxing in the water, just swimming, just like I don't know. You just float along and swim, not getting tired, thinking about what it's going to be like in transition. So then you get out, and I fell down. So I got out of the water, and first thing I did was splat right on me, because I dropped my hat. So I went down to get it, got dizzy, got up right into a mud puddle, splashed out all over the place, and eventually got on my way.
Were you worried when you got dizzy? Was that like a sign of, uh-oh, something's wrong?
Yeah, I anticipated it because I had done that before. It seems like when you're swimming for a long period of time, you just kind of got to get your bearings about you. It's like spinning around in a little circle real fast. You recover very quickly. It's not like you're hurt. You feel funny for a second. So I get out of the water, and you feel funny for a second because I had bent way over, all the way down to get my thing. Came up really fast. And I think it just has to do with blood not making its way up to your brain quickly enough. I mean, I'm really relaxed. Heart's not going very hard. I'm just hanging out. And so, it actually happens whenever I get up. Anyhow, so then you run to your bike. And pulling your stuff off as you're going. You're getting your wetsuit off. You get in there, and you put all your bike gear on. So you run out with your helmet on. And that's a big thing, too. You got to make sure you have all your gear. It's got to all be lined up. It's got to all be in the bag. You can't get there and have no helmet. You got no helmet, you're out of the race. You don't want to forget your gloves. You don't want to forget all the little things that you want to have. And then they yell your number, and they pull your bike out. I just knew the general area, but they pull it out. It was so cool. They pull it out for you. You run up, and you grab your bike. You feel like royalty, and off you go. I remember just saying, I got to stay steady. Let's just hang in there. And so I was riding with the people and so we were on a Sunday ride. You ride out there, you get out of town about 13 miles, I think is called the stick. And then you start in the loop. And I found the loop to be just exciting as heck. I had ridden it a bunch of times. I knew it very well.
What is the loop?
Okay, so in Madison, Wisconsin, the loop is, it's a 40-mile loop. And it's full of hills, up and down. And the downs are super fast. They are super. I mean, when I went up there the first time, I was scared to go down the hills. I had my brakes on. My eyes are watering. Then I get down to the bottom, and I'd pedal up the hill.
You sent me a video of you going up the hill, and it was really an interesting scene.
You're hardly walking up.
I know. I'm like, boy, if these guys don't continue to kill their quads and just drive their legs down, they're going to go backwards or fall over.
Yeah,
like you were going, everyone was going slow up that hill.
Yeah, that was that video. That was actually after about a 3-hill climb. It was a go up a hill. You go flat for a little bit, then you go up another hill, and then you went flat for about a mile, and then it was up again. And that was not as bad as those first two. But man, yeah, after that, it's total relief because you've got a flat for a long time. But yeah, those hills they're hard to go up, but the hills going down, I don't know how I can explain it, but they have rolling hills and they're really long. I mean, I'd say the hill's got to be at least a half a mile long going down. You're doing 40, at least 40, 45 miles an hour, and you're just flying down the hill. It's so cool. And I enjoyed the speed, and everybody else is, you know, going slow because if you don't raid that course, you don't ride that course, you're going to be scared down those hills. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, this bike I'm looking at is about as thin as a piece of paper, and I guess that actually comes into play when you're racing down a hill at 45. You're drag race and you want to be pretty aerodynamic. And did you have one of those teardrop
I did
I did
yeah they say that besides your tires and your bike, your helmet is a big deal in cutting down your wind resistance. I'm not exactly sure how those aerodynamics work, but cool.
Yeah.
I wore it. So then you make your way around the loop twice. So you go around the loop twice, 80 miles, so you got all these hills up and down. You did them twice. And so you say, I never had a hard time. The race day was just fantastic. It was so much fun. All those hills were so much fun. Okay, so then you get back to the stick, and now you got to make it back to town. Well, a lot of people have dropped off. When I was coming out, I might have been riding with 20, 30 people. I'm riding back with about 5, you know, and they're way up there, and there's behind me, and somebody's passed me, and I passed one guy. Before, it was a constant swing. You know, there's just people everywhere. So the stick was lonely. And it was uphill. It was windy, a little bit rainy. Just, you know, it was a little bit miserable, but it wasn't bad. And
it was a little bit miserable, but it wasn't mad.
It wasn't bad. Yeah,
you also said the hills were fun.
Oh, that was fun.
Some people are going to think you're psychotic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, that was thrilling. I would get ready to go up there to train, and it was never like, oh, I got to go to Madison and ride. Man, it was, I get to go to Madison and ride that course. It was really cool for me. Yeah, definitely. Definitely cool. So then you get back and you ride up the Helix. You get in there and you change your clothes. You go into this little hotel area, actually a big conference room. And you get your gear and there's people sitting around. And I felt bad for them. I was a runner. I had done the swim and the bike. And I already knew I'd finish the race. I'm ready. I'm good to go.
Yeah, this is your time to shine.
There's guys sitting in the corner with their helmets on, and they've got a big old sign on their forehead that says, I can't do a marathon. You just can't. And they just rode really hard because that's what they do.
Gosh.
They rode really hard. They got there. And now did they leave anything for the marathon? Yeah, you got to run a marathon.
That's insane. You have to run a marathon. People don't finish marathons all the time that start them.
By themselves, yeah. I didn't know if I could. I knew I could at that time, but when I first started training, I had run tons of marathons. Marathons before. And I had always run, I had run 30 miles is probably as far as I ever run. And I had done that a bunch of times. So when you say I'd run a marathon, I probably did about 20 marathons just at home without being entered in a race. So, I mean, I've entered 30 races marathoning.
Have you ever had knee surgery or anything? Or?
I did. I had a meniscus tear, but I think it was from basketball. But
really?
And it got bad running. And now it's kind of a bummer. It actually hurts.
Anyone who runs that often is bound to have something go wrong with their body, whether it be their knees, their hips, their feet. Do you think you have the genetics for running or something?
No. I didn't tell you that. I mean, my knees hurt all the time.
You just didn't complain about it.
You just can't. Yeah. I mean, I'm sleeping at nighttime and I have to roll over. I wake up. Why do I wake up? Because I'm in such pain. I have to straighten my leg out, turn over and pull my legs back because I sleep in a crouchy position and I'm either on one side or the other. So I wake up and go, oh, and then, you know, I know it's going to be so painful to turn over. So you stretch your legs out. Oh, and it's just, oh, and then you roll over. Okay. Now you got to pull them back up. It's so weird. It's really weird. Okay. What was the difference? Because I put up with that. When you go out and go running, the first 2 or 3 miles might hurt a little bit, but after that it goes away.
You get warm
or
something?
I don't get it. Yeah, they warm up. Your bursa sacs start working. Something starts working. Everything's good. The major difference between all of my marathoning when I would do that and this Ironman was I was working out at Elite. I was doing tons of squats. Oh, Elite Sport and Fitness. It's from Gibson's Area Hospital. And I worked out there 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week, an hour a day. And I would get up at 5:30 and get in there at 6, work out till 7. Matt Kimmons was my trainer.
That's what I was going to ask.
Followed up every day how I was doing, what's happening. Some days he would put it on a little harder. Some days he would take it off. It seemed like he knew what was going on. He'd ask me what I've got planned that day, and I'd say, I got a 4-hour ride. Sometimes I would do my 5-hour ride, and I would come in and work out. I did that very rarely. I usually worked out in the morning, probably 90% of the time. But I think the biggest difference between my old marathoning days and this Ironman was those workouts. Tons and tons of squats, tons of lunges. I was always lunging, always squatting for almost an hour. So the knees are getting work, instead of jar.
Right.
And then on the bike and the swim, again, pretty nice on the body. And I didn't run. I ran. Remember, I told you I ran really hard through the winter to be prepared for the summer, and the summer was going to be bike. So yeah, I had some pain through the winter, and I did throw in a few 20s in the summertime, but they were few and far between. It was all bike and all swim. So the body felt great, just great. And that was another huge positive to my Ironman. When I get up there, you feel confident because your body feels great. And you listen to Ironman podcasts. I did that, and they talked about overtraining. Don't get there perfectly trained and tired, or overtrained and worn out. You want to be full of energy, and it's better to be a little undertrained. But I felt well trained and full of energy, so I was excited. It was going to be a good race, and It turned out to be fantastic.
So you begin that marathon then, and how does that go? And you said some guys are
starting to hop out there, and I'm going really slow. And my brother's actually saying to my wife too. She said, you know, we were worried that it was all over, or that you weren't going to make the 12 hours. So 12 hours was actually the goal. Finishing was a far away goal, but 12 hours was the actual goal. You got to want to break 12. A few people, 12, again, the few break 12. The very, very few do it in 10. Can't make that. I couldn't make that level. Get out there on the run, and I'm going a little slow. And actually, it was an overcast day. I think the temperature is probably about 70. And it rained. It didn't ever rain hard, but it misted every once in a while, which was actually kind of nice. But I spent a lot of time on a bike. Got to drink, got to eat. I had alarms on my watch that would go off every 10 minutes to drink and eat. Got to drink and eat. And then I would try to drink in between those. And my eat was Ensure. I only ate Ensure. I didn't eat any solid food.
Ensure, like the protein drink?
Yeah, I always call it the old person drink. That's what we get for old people. Anyhow, through 6 hours, it took me 6.5 hours to bike. So it took me an hour and a half to swim. And then it took me about 6.5 hours to bike. And then I get out there and start running, and I have to go to the bathroom. And I had to go every 5 or 6 minutes, it seemed like. So for the 6 or 7 miles, I went to the bathroom. I hopped in these porta-potties, wherever I could find one. And I wasn't going a little bit. It wasn't like I was going, it was crazy. And I thought, this is crazy. But I told myself, this is actually great. I'm well hydrated. I'm ready to go. This is good. So my body, I couldn't do it on the bike for some reason. I did on the bike. I stopped once, and I did go on the bike once, which is always a trip. But peeing on the bike is actually something you have to learn. And I got a long way to learn that, because I couldn't bike when I was doing it. The pros can bike. They pee and bike at the same time, so they don't stop.
How do they do that?
Well, like I say, they pee and keep going.
And it's just on the...
That's how you do it. It takes training. It takes hard work. It's not easy. Yeah. You
have to
work
on it.
Yeah. So otherwise, yeah. I mean, can you imagine these pros are doing 30, 25, 30 miles an hour on the straight flat, and you're going to stop and take a minute and go potty? Are you out of your mind? You're going to be so far behind, you're not going to catch him. So you got to, you in order to stay in that peloton and keep going with these guys, I mean, I'm sure some have to stop, and but the pros in the front, I guess, I surmise, because I'm not there. They pee on the bike. So I get out that past that 6 mile mark. I hit the half marathon, and I am feeling a little rough. Definitely feeling a little rough. I got there, got my personal bag. I ate my half a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I drank a whole Red Bull and a little bit of Coke. I said, that feels good. Anyway, I took off out of there with an Ensure and a little water. And I don't know, the sun came out. It didn't really. It came out for me. Because it was still raining and overcast. But the next 7 miles went well, and then it was time to come on home at 6.5. You had a 10K left after you get past 20. Anybody can run a 10K, you know, if you've trained a little bit. I'm feeling great. And your body feels really weird, but my mind and my body were, they were up and down because my Matt was there and my wife was there, and she said, yeah, you would look great and look terrible, look great, look terrible, in and out, in and out, in and out. And it all seemed the same to me. So one of the things, the half marathon, you run, it's a loop, so two loops. So you go around, and when you finish that first half marathon, you're about 15 feet from the finish line. And you turn around and go back the other way.
Oh, did that hurt?
Well, it hurt really bad because somebody was with me. He goes to the finish line.
Oh,
I
got to
run another
gosh.
Half marathon. Ugh. Anyhow, that felt good when I came back. And I went to the finish line and people were taking that turn. So that was kind of cool. Yeah, so that was devastating. So it made the final entry to the red carpet just unreal. It was unreal. I couldn't believe how cool it was to run on the red carpet. It was incredible. Really incredible.
And there's people lined up on the sides of that carpet, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
those big crowds really the whole way. The Madison really is crowd the whole way. My wife was all over the place. I saw her biking. She saw me running. She saw me probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 times. Because you run up one block, you go over a block, and come back down. Well, the person that's watching can watch you here, walk a block, and see you again a mile later. So so that was really neat that way. She was in the stands when I went through the finish line. You got the famous Mike Riley saying, John Strong, you are an Ironman. I mean, the whole thing is well done. It's so cool. It's the best in the absolute. It's absolutely the best athletic day of my life. Definitely, by far. And I've done a lot of good things, a lot of fun things. So,
holy cow. So what kind of emotions did you feel when you ran through the finish line? Was it relief that you were done? Or was it like, I did it. This was worth it. Was there, I mean, what were you thinking?
I thought this is just the best. I didn't know if it was because I'd finished thinking about the whole day. I mean, you get a quick shot of everything that happened, and you know, you just feel fantastic. I mean, I don't know how you explain it. It's kind of like there's a few things you just can't explain. Probably wrestling, you know, when you win a big match, you just, it's just the best. It's just the best. And I mean, how you explain it? It's just the best.
Right.
And it was. The whole, and it was so long. I mean, that red carpet was really long. It was probably 100 yards. And you just get the bask, and you're in there all by yourself because, you know, you get so strung out. And everybody's cheering, and they're cheering for you. And yeah, and you finished, and you feel great. And I mean, just on and on, and everything is just so cool. And you finish through this finish line, and they make sure you're okay. And you take some pictures, and you're off. Go get your stuff. You can go into the village and eat. They have a lot of free food for you. I actually went and got clothes on. Ice cold. So I went and put my clothes on, and then I came back and talked to my brother and my wife a little bit. Had a good time. Took some pictures, and then things started to fall apart.
You mean like physically?
Physically fall apart. Yeah.
How so?
Okay. So your mind. I thought my mind started to go a little bit. Was actually where I started to fall apart. Okay, so we get into this bus. These are the things I remember, and then of course they told me a lot of this stuff afterwards. We get into this bus to go back to the hotel. I have my eyes closed, but I can hear everything that's going on. It's almost like I'm there, but I'm not there. I'm just floating around, and I can hear them talking about all this stuff, the race and this and that and the other thing. And then I would just try to. Apparently, I sounded like I was just drunk.
And we'll hear more about John's crazy and weird experience in just one second. But first, I'd like to give a shout out to one of the show's amazing sponsors, a local place that's perfect for relaxation and beautification called J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa in downtown Fairbury. This is an amazing establishment. It's staffed with friendly, professional trained stylists who offer a wide variety of salon services at an affordable price, including haircuts, color services, waxing, lash extensions, manicures, pedicures, acrylic enhancements, and my personal favorite that I've gotten myself, a wide variety of specialty massages. They're open Tuesday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. for walk-ins, and then again on those same days from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., but for scheduled appointments only. They're also open on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is what you need during these times. You're stressed, you're angry, you're lashing out on loved ones. Go and treat yourself to a quality salon experience for your own sake and for the sake of those that are around you. Go to J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa at 204 East Locust Street in Fairbury. You can also shoot them a message on their Facebook page, J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa. Again, that's J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa in Fairbury. Come on, treat yourself. You deserve this. All right, back to John's story.
I didn't know what I was saying. I thought I was talking. I thought I had was part of the conversation. Apparently, I was not a part of the conversation. So then we get back to the hotel. I get in there and I sat down. Everything's cool. Good. I feel so. I'm starting to eat a little bit, drink a little bit. Then I got really cold. I have my coat on. I have dry clothes on. I got really cold. I mean, really cold. So I got on the bed and I took all the blankets and all of my gear, everything that I had. We had two beds in there. Took all the blankets and piled them on. And so I'm under all these covers. I have my coat on. I have my hat, gloves, and you know, it's winter coat. And I'm under all these blankets and I'm trying, and I'm just shivering like crazy. I'm going like crazy. Yeah. And anyhow, it's not that they were scared. Again, my mind was just floating. I felt fine, but I was cold. No big deal. It wasn't that bad. And my daughter was a nurse. And of course, Matt was around. So, you know, I just had to get through it. Then I got really hot. So I couldn't, had to get everything off. And I'm too hot. Too cold. So it was just like some of the workings of my body just stopped working for a little bit. And then eventually I went to sleep. And that was the end of that. So what was really sad was I finished and then you go out there. So it's about 7 o'clock at night, 6-7 o'clock at night. So yeah, I finished in 12 hours. So it'd be about 7. So it'd be about 7:30, 8 o'clock. I probably recovered about 9 and went to sleep. And I really wanted to get up at 11 and go back out to the finish line. You go back out. It's a tradition that you go back out to the finish. Everybody goes to the finish line at 11 o'clock at night and cheers in those guys. Or midnight. It's midnight. Yeah, you go out at 11 and at midnight, the race is over. They cut it off. So if you're not done at midnight, they go get you. You're done. The race is over.
That's really suck if that's...
Yeah. Well, you never know. You can't tell. Would it really suck for you? Because, I mean, you tried really hard and maybe your bike broke and you had to walk your bike for 5 miles, 10 miles. I mean, you don't know what happens to all these guys. Everybody's got their story. And you just want to cheer them on and do the best you can for all those guys. Anyhow, so you go out there and you cheered. I did this when my brother ran it, and it was the best. It was, again, I mean, I don't know how thrilling this thing could be, but these guys coming in at midnight, 11:30, 11, 11:30, 12 o'clock midnight, they work so hard all day long. They started at 7 just like us, and they're still working it. And they're coming in, and they're so excited. They're thrilled. It's unbelievable. The whole feeling is, yeah. No, you got to experience it. I can't explain it. Sorry. So that's the end of the day. And you go to bed. You got up the next morning, went and bought a bunch of stuff at the shop and drove home.
Wow.
That's it.
My goodness. You really put your body through the ringer on this day, it sounds like.
Yeah, that next day I was pretty sore. I definitely was sore. I had a hard time going down stairs, walking, just took everything real slow, real cool. Yeah, it was nice.
But I bet.
But you know what's really funny? I mean, I actually like that feeling. You know, when you... If you've wrestled really hard in a long tournament, you've wrestled 5-6 times that day, you kind of feel good. I don't know what it is. And the next day, you just like, wow.
Yeah.
I wrestled when I was in fifth grade. And I thought when after I wrestled a really hard thing, and then the next Monday, we went to recess, and I thought I was twice as fast. I just thought I was, because I had done that wrestling, had recovered, and I just dashed around that recess playground like I was fast. I don't know if it was true, but I sure felt like I was.
What do you think one of the biggest things that this whole experience, the year of training, the Ironman itself, did you learn anything from it?
Well, I guess I'm fascinated at the body that God gave us. I'm just fascinated. It is amazing. There's guys out there and girls out there, they weigh a lot and they're bigger and they work really hard. And there's some out there that have half a leg and there's some out there that don't have an arm. I mean, your body, if you want to, can do it. And this is the sport that you can do. It's really neat and it's fascinating. Everybody has their own story, but I just, when I would bonk on the bike or bonk on the, and your body would say, no problem, let's do it again, try it again, you can do it, piece of cake, keep going. I don't get it. I don't understand. Right now, there's no way I could do an Ironman. I don't understand how I got there. You asked me before if I thought I would do it again. That would be the reason I'd want to do it again, because I would want to build. That process of building up to it is fascinating, and that's the best. Would I do it again, the excitement and all that? Yes, absolutely. I want to feel that again. The hard work, not really. I mean, I did. It was kind of a bummer. Today, I got to ride the bike 5 miles. Today, I got to run 12 and swim 2. And, you know, those days were kind of tough. And doing 20 hours of training a week was kind of tough. I'd rather not do that part.
Right. Well, John, we're about to kind of wrap this episode up. Just, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
You bet. Yeah, thanks to my wife. She she really stuck with me that whole time. She was the one that suggested that I go to Elite, and then my son-in-law took me in and really kept me going. So I've got to thank those two. And the thing that I heard, it was really just stuck in my mind. Mike Riley is the announcer at these Ironmen. They do these Ironmans all over the world, and Mike Riley is the official Ironman announcer, and he does most of them. He can't do them all, but he does most of them. And so he's the guy that comes in, and he talks you in the morning, and when you're finishing, he's telling the crowd what's going on, who's coming in. Anyhow, so what I'd like to say is what he told us as swimmers just before the gun goes off. He says, it's going to be a long day. There's going to be a lot happen out there. You can't control it. What you can control is your attitude. See you at the finish line. And that was it. He stopped talking. It was like, holy moly, that's the best. It doesn't matter what happens. My attitude is everything. Am I happy? Am I going? Yes, I'm ready. Let's go.
There we go. Well, thank you very much. That was a journey, man. That was all great, right? Talking to you. Thank you very much for coming on. I think people are going to be really captivated by this episode. So thank you very much, John. It was a pleasure having you on.
Hey, you're welcome. I appreciate it very much. I don't think I qualify to be on your show with the people I've heard. They are fascinating, and you've had really good guests, and I hope I can just be one of the little guys that can sneak in there. But thank you very much for having me.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure's all mine.
And all great things must come to an end. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or any social media platform. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can head over to thegoldinfusionpodcast.com and donate as little as $1 if you'd like. If you're a small business who wants to have your business advertised in this podcast, again, just head over to thegoldinfusionpodcast.com and drop us a line in the ad spot section at the bottom of the homepage. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gold Infusion Podcast. God bless and have a great week.